From our nation's capital, this is Naps Chat.
I'm gonna sit right down and write myself a letter and make believe it came from you.
Welcome to this week's episode of Naps Chat. I'm Bob Levy, the Director of Legislative and Political Affairs for the National Association of Postal Supervisors. There has been a lot of news generated this week, so I am glad to have someone to schmooze with at the NAPS headquarters to talk about this news, and that's Brian Wagner, our national president. Welcome to NAPS Chat again, Brian.
Thanks for the invite, Bob.
The news this week has not only impacted NAPS members, but also impacted the postal community as a whole. First, there was the nomination of three individuals to fill the current vacancies at the Postal Service Board of Governors. Second, a hearing was conducted by the House Oversight and Reform Committee on potential postal legislation. And third, a NAPS campaign to press state governors to prioritize the administration of COVID-19 vaccines for employees of the United States Postal Service. And these are the issues that we've been talking about for the better part of this week. We were anticipating the hearing. We were planning for the campaign. We were not anticipating the Board of Governors selection on the same day as the postal hearing, but we'll talk about that in a minute. But on Wednesday morning, you and I settled down in front of our computer screens with a first of many hot cups of coffee.
I'd say pots, but okay.
Okay, pots. And we were awaiting the beginning of the House Oversight and Reform Committee hearing. Whatever news would have emerged from that hearing may have been eclipsed by President Biden's nomination of three individuals to fill current vacancies at the Board of Governors. The nominees are former Deputy Postmaster General Ron Stroman, former General Counsel to the American Postal Workers Union Anton Hajar, and the Chief Executive Officer of the National Vote at Home Institute and former Denver Election Director Amber Reynolds. In addition to filling out the board with individuals who have different experiences with regard to the Postal Service, they add a bit of diversity to the board. Brian, as I said, they all have different postal experiences. Ron as deputy PMG, Hajar representing labor, and Reynolds promoting vote by mail. How do you think the addition of these three individuals, if they were confirmed, would impact postal governance and policy, as well as relationships with NAPS?
Well, Bob, I think it's an excellent idea to get the full Board of Governors. I do know Ron Stroman. Former Deputy Postmaster General, he's worked with NAPS, not only with us on our efforts on congressional issues, but on the Hill. Ron's a first-class guy. A lot of respect for him. He brings a lot to the table there. I don't know the other two individuals, but when you're looking at somebody who's going to have the interests of employees, I think that's important. And with the vote by mail or the mailing industry, especially with ballots, that's very important too, because this past general election, postal employees delivered democracy with the mail-in ballots by going above and beyond to make sure that every ballot was delivered as efficiently as possible.
It's my understanding with regard to Amber that when she was running the Denver Election Department or Election Division, they were one of the first to actually run a full vote-by-mail operation in the country. So she has tremendous experience dealing with absentee balloting.
Well, and that's great because we do know, five states in the country have all mail-in ballots, and we can contest that we did an outstanding job. All the postal employees, 640,000. I was on the Postal Service National Election Mail Task Force with a great team to make sure that we did the job of getting these ballots delivered to the voters and then returned back to the election boards.
It was mentioned at the hearing in the members of Congress are waiting with bated breath, as we all are, about the strategic plan that the Postmaster General has been promoting or talking about in the recent past. Do you think that he should delay the release of that strategic plan till he has a fully operational Board of Governors?
Well, Bob, I listened to the hearing, and I know the Postmaster General mentioned that within about 2 weeks they would have their proposal. It hasn't been finalized, even though he was questioned about different aspects of it. But, you know, getting a full board together to have all eyes on that, I think that's a good idea first. Let's see what the full board can do with it and move forward. The Postmaster General did say after he announces the 10-year plan that he would come back to the Congress and for more discussion. But I like the idea of having a full board right now reviewing this.
It would appear that the consensus is that we are concerned about what might be in that strategic plan, at least by members of Congress. So this would have an opportunity, as you said, to have an extra set of eyes looking at that strategic plan.
Well, after yesterday's hearing, I mean, the Board of Governors said it's not really finalized, so did the Postmaster General. So this might give an extra time, to look at it more in depth and see if there's other opportunities to make sure that the post office is moving forward positively, which we're trying to do, and financially.
Okay. Now, at Wednesday's hearing, at which live testimony was offered by the Board of Government Chair Ron Blum, Postmaster General Louis DeJoy, Postal Inspector General Tammy Whitcomb, APWU President Mark Dimenstein, Kevin Kosa with the American Enterprise Institute, who is a frequent guest on NAPS Chat, as well as a representative from the mailing industry. In addition to that, NAPS did submit testimony for the hearing, which has been posted to our website. Can you give us a little bit of insight into what our testimony would reflect?
Well, our testimony was really what they also talked about, the pre-funding issue of the post office having to pay future retiree health benefits. That needed to be fixed. It's very important that they address that. I know that when you're looking at greater flexibility with regard to dynamic markets and being able to have innovation, pricing, the idea about part of ours was also about Merit System Protection Board rights for all EAS. But I think it's very important that we have legislation that will help the post office on financial stability. And it's very important. And of course, we also had mentioned something about the coronavirus pandemic, you know, getting support for our postal employees.
Right. And we also spoke about consultative rights for postal supervisors as we move forward, because we're entering this consultative phase right now, as much as the NELC is going to be right.
And it's a good point, Bob, because we had H.R. 6085 in the last Congress that was submitted and to give consultative rights for NAPS with regard to when we're doing pay and benefits with the post office in consultation, not negotiations, to be able to have more teeth in the Title 39 so that our members understand that when we go to fact-finding, which we did, the fact-finders looked at all the facts, of course, as it is fact-finding, it's kind of redundancy, but at the end of the day, they ruled in favor of the NAPS. And it's kind of disappointing that we didn't get a lot of those recommendations through at the last fact-finding. We're hoping legislation for getting more teeth, H.R. like 6085 that was there for statutory consultation would go through.
There was a point at the hearing yesterday where Congressman DeSaulnier from California questioned APWU President Mark Dimenstein about MSPB rights for postal managers. Could you share us what occurred when that question was asked?
Well, I was very pleased that, and I give kudos to Mark Dimenstein of APW President for supporting MSPB rights for all EAS. It was very nice. Again, it's something we've been fighting for, working for at least 7,500 of our members or EAS. So that was a very nice support that we received from the APW on their guidance on that.
At the hearing, the chairwoman of the committee, Carolyn Maloney of New York, promoted the beginnings or the kernel of a legislative proposal that she intends to introduce in the not-too-distant future. The three components included enhanced Congressional and Postal Regulatory Commission monitoring of postal performance, Medicare integration for future annuitants, and repeal of the 2006 retiree health pre-funding requirement. What's your reaction to that proposal?
Bob, it's a good start. And we understand it's important to get those things through, but it's not going to overall save the post office. We still need more innovation with products, pricing issues like that. So with that, it's a good start. I think we need to expand it more. And NAPS is looking for ways that we can help with this legislation in order to get this assistance to the Postal Service on financial stability.
Yeah, when we're talking about Medicare integration, and I just want to underscore that for our listeners, this relates to future annuitants. Current annuitants, although they would be permitted voluntarily to go into Medicare Part B without penalty during a window, this would primarily, if not, affect future retirees. Board of Governors Chair Ron Blum indicated that Medicare integration would save the Postal Service anywhere from $30 to $40 billion over the next 10 years. Do you think that would make a difference? I mean, it's a small down payment to postal restoration, but how do you think this liability relief will impact the Postal Service?
Well, I think it's going to be a benefit to the Postal Service. What we know is that Medicare integration, and from what I was hearing and the facts I know about, 72% of current retirees, you already paid into Medicare, are already taking it. So it's about 28% of those who have not taken it would be required, you know, even though the new retirees would be required to take it. So when you're looking at savings, you're already paying into Medicare, you might as well utilize the benefits that you have. And if it can benefit the Postal Service, there was a question about the solvency of Medicare, but that hasn't really anything to do with the Post Office. That's a Medicare issue that Congress needs to address.
And it's important to realize that these folks are already eligible for Medicare because they've contributed in through the employer payroll tax and their contribution. I believe it's 1.3%. So they already are eligible for participation in Medicare. So it's something that they're already entitled to.
Right. They're already entitled to. They're already, again, they're paying into it. So just look on an extreme. If everyone who can get into Medicare and who paid into it did, you still have the same results. You have 100% of people participating. It does not change the fact that even though about 28% of the people aren't in it, that isn't going to change Medicare in itself. But it would be of a benefit to the Postal Service in future savings.
Talking a little bit about benefits and compensation issues, one of the reassuring things from this hearing was that unlike one of his predecessors, and I'm referring to Postmaster General Patrick Donahoe, who promoted the elimination of the federal employees' retirement system for postal employees because he believed that the Postal Service's annuity system should be converted from a defined benefit plan, which first is a very small component. It would be converted to a defined contribution plan, like a totally 401k. Postmaster General DeJoy did not want to go in that direction. Does that provide reassurance to you?
It does, and I'm glad he went that way because one of the things we're trying to look at is, one, getting the financial relief for the Postal Service, you know, changing of infrastructure, more flexibility in pricing, and getting to the innovation into the market. You're talking pay and benefits of a postal employees, which, again, when you're looking at the bigger picture, there's bigger savings, and I'm not sure if you want to take away from the employees who have been working so hard. You know, like I said, they're dedicated. They're getting the job done. They just need the tools and resources and the support from management and the Postal Service executives to continue serving the American public.
The question that was posed was not a friendly question. I think the questioner was encouraging the Postmaster General to support conversion to a totally defined contribution plan. But what wasn't discussed, unfortunately, was that the current plan that postal employees participate in is a hybrid plan where there is a rather major defined contribution portion of it, the Thrift Savings Plan, a very small defined benefit plan, and then Social Security.
Correct.
So it was the question, I don't think, was actually a fair question.
Right. Well, I'm old civil service. So now you have the FERS, which is that with that hybrid. So I would think leave that alone. Let's look at the other issues at hand on taking care of the pre-funding, making sure Medicare integration is looked at, giving the Post Office more opportunities to increase revenue through innovation, and watch the pricing.
At times, the hearing the other day, it seemed rather hyper-partisan. It sort of ventured into that area. What was your reaction to the partisan tone of some parts of that hearing?
I'm going to tell you, Bob, I was not very happy on the partisan side of it. unfortunately, there was too much finger pointing, and I think they needed to point the finger in the direction of working to get the post office into financial solvency and working on, again, these issues we talked about, the pre-funding. Let's face it, you can point all the fingers you want, but at the end of the day, all we're doing is hurting the American public by not getting their mail delivered to them timely and not working on a process and a system or an infrastructure that's going to continue the Postal Service being successful, not only today, tomorrow, but well into the future.
And also, we should move beyond the partisanship that that took place, let's say, beginning last year, the finger-pointing on who was trying to destroy the Postal Service, who was trying to help the Postal Service. Now, if we can wrap our arms around a bipartisan bill or a bill that aims for bipartisan ends, and that is one of the most bipartisan, nonpartisan institutions in the government, the Postal Service, we should go in that direction.
Right. We have to stop looking back on what has happened and move forward. Otherwise, we keep looking back, we're going to trip moving forward, and we're not going to get to the right direction we need to go with the Post Office being on sound financial stability and making sure the service is back to the delivery standards that we've worked so hard to continue with the Post Office.
Yeah, that doesn't mean we shouldn't learn from history, but just we have to look through the windshield, not through the rearview mirror.
Exactly. Good point. Again, you learn from the past to move forward, that you don't repeat the errors of the past.
One of the statements made by the Postmaster General revolved about performance standards and goals that he sought to meet. Both Representative with regard to performance, both Representative Gibbs from Ohio and Joel Kudachi, who the head of the Quad Graphics, who testified on behalf of the mailers, expressed diminished confidence in the Postal Service. From our perspective, what do we need to do to restore confidence of the mailing public in the United States Postal Service due to perceived reductions in performance?
That's a very good question, Bob. You know, I think a lot of the issues we need to address, and I'll go back to taking care of the things that are distracting us right now of the pre-funding of the retiree health benefits. Let's get that fixed. You know, as for the services, the Post Office needs to make sure it has its networks and its infrastructure in place to make sure that we can continually serve the customer. The postal employees are dedicated. Our supervisors, managers, postmasters, everyone coming in to the unit, they're there to get the job done. They're focused on service to the American public. And I think the key is making sure we have the right resources and the right training and the right staffing in order to make this happen. With service as it has dropped, we understand COVID has been a factor, but we also need to make sure that we have the right equipment and the right processing tools to get the mail delivered timely now and move back to where people have all the trust and faith in the Postal Service. And in all honesty, most people do. We've had a trip and fall, but we need to get up and move forward and dust ourselves off and get back to that service standards of those deliveries of the optimal that we've always been.
Let's talk about those service standards for a moment. As I said, the Postmaster General has indicated that the current goals are unachievable. Mm-hmm. So the anticipated plan will loosen those standards a bit. I have two questions stemming from that. Number one, how do you think reducing those standards will impact confidence in the Postal Service? And secondly, is there an analogy here between the Postal Service offering that it has established unachievable goals and the PFP National Performance Assessment for Postal Managers?
Boy, Bobby, really hit me with some great questions this NAPS chat. Let's look at the delivery standards. To me, you should always move forward to improve, not go back. I don't believe that we should be reducing our delivery standards. One of the things is we always talk about a continuous improvement. But that also brings us into the National Performance Assessment, the goal setting the Post Office has done. NAPS has said in the past, when we were in pay consultations and consultations with NPA, as they call it, that some of these goals are unattainable, unrealistic. There's goals that we've never made. So when you're trying to tie that into the pay and benefits of EAS, you've got to look at, have you put in the right resources, the right infrastructure, the right processes in order to achieve those goals? Don't set a goal that just looks pretty on paper and then you think that's what you're going to be able to do when in realistic, you don't have the resources to make that goal. That's too big of a spread of what you actually demonstrated performance and then what you're trying to achieve. Did you put in the right resources to make that? So with that, I always see that we need to move forward, positive and improving. You know, post office talks about incremental improvement. That's what we need to do. Not go back on what we can't accomplish. We need to look for what we can accomplish and get the right tools and materials and resources and processes in place for that.
As a related and a related note, there was a question at the hearing about local management's inability to make independent decisions to address local issues. If there's a local operational issue, whether or not the local postal manager or supervisor has the autonomy to make changes to provide for the services of his community in the most effective way. What is your view about managerial autonomy?
You know, Bob, I don't have to tell you, you've heard this before from our Executive Vice President Ivan Butz and our National Secretary Treasurer Chuck Mulladore and myself. We know how to do our jobs. I've been in the post office for over 36 years. You have trained us. We have experience. Let managers make these decisions that they need to make. Don't tie their hands. And those are some of the challenges we've seen where a manager can't make a decision without calling up three levels up into the higher level of management, whether from the, we'll call it from the postmaster of the POOM to the district manager of the area. My thing is give the confidence back to these managers in the field on the front line who see it every day that do their job that they've been trained to do, and they will get the job done. They always have and they always will, but just don't tie their hands. And it's time to let these managers make these decisions that have the confidence in them to do their job.
There was a reference, I think Congresswoman Tlaib from Detroit made the reference about four DBCSs, that's delivery barcode sorters, had been reactivated or replugged in because they were never dismantled in one of the Detroit processing plants, but nobody ever told local management to put them online. Now, whether or not there's programming issues, I have no idea. Local management would be in the best position to answer that, but nobody seemed to be giving a directive to the local manager, it appears, to the local manager to start the process.
I saw that part of the testimony. And again, it really comes back to trust the people who are on the floor, who are doing the job, to say, hey, look, this is what we need. Yes, there was concerns about a machines being taken out of service and being put back in. So if it just makes it look good on paper, but if you're not going to use it, then why'd you do it? My thing is, it comes down to trust the people who are doing the job, and they will make the delivery of getting this mail delivered.
Let's talk about a new campaign that NAPS initiated recently, and that was to alert state governors to prioritize the administration of COVID vaccines to USPS employees. The previous presidential administration basically decentralized the administration of vaccines and delegated that responsibility to states rather than retaining the responsibility at the federal level. Could you talk about a little bit about our campaign reaching out to state governors?
Well, I think it was a great idea for us to reach out to the state governors to let them know that postal employees are essential workers, from the clerk to carrier, the supervisor to the managers, all the way up. We're getting the mail delivered. They're on the front lines. And I get there's the issue with vaccines, the limited, but it needs to be a consistent list across the country, who's on and who's not, or at that time for when the vaccines are available. And to me, when you're telling the public that the Postal Service is essential, you need to make sure the essential employees get these vaccines who want them. It's very important. And I would love to see them have a consistent list across the country, not just by state or by new municipality, that postal employees who are doing the job have an opportunity to get these vaccines.
Yeah, because the Centers for Disease Control categorize postal employees as part of phase 1B administration of the vaccines. Yet some states, I mean, I reviewed recently New York's instructions, and I don't see postal employees anywhere in phase one on their list of eligible employees for administration. According to the Homeland Security, we're part of the essential infrastructure of the United States. Yet we're not, it's not that we're asking for anything more than anyone else in 1B. is receiving. It's just that we want to be included among the 1B recipients.
Exactly. And I agree with that, Bob, because here's what you're looking at. The CDC has made a recommendation. Follow the recommendation. We talk about following the science or the government has with regard to COVID. Follow the recommendations. Those who are in 1B, give them an opportunity and don't have subcategories. That's the challenge. You have subcategories, as I see it, in the 1B category. So how does that fall? There's no consistency. We need that consistency to say, look, if you're in 1B, you have an opportunity to get that vaccine, and you want to take it, go get it.
Final question, Brian, and I know people are waiting for your answer. What is the ice cream flavor of the day?
Well, my birthday's in March. And March is a big Irish month also, because I am Irish, so it's going to be Irish cream.
With alcohol in it or without alcohol in it?
For those who are trying to be good, without alcohol in it.
That's great, Brian. Brian Wagner, president of the National Association of Postal Supervisors, thanks for joining us today on Naps Chat.
Bob, thank you very much for inviting me again. And I ask all of our members and your families, all be safe and be careful and, take care and God bless.
I want to thank the Naps Chat listeners for logging on this week. If you enjoy Naps Chat, please leave us a positive review in the Apple Podcast Store. And more importantly, share Naps Chat with your friends and colleagues. In the meantime, stay safe and stay healthy.
I'm gonna spend